Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. It's 4 minutes after the hour. It is Wednesday, and it is March 28th. And I was reading that a woman named Lhapka Sherpa is making her ninth trip to the top of Mount Everest. I think she had only planned to make 8 trips, but she left her AirPods up there last time she went, so she had to go retrieve them. Have you seen how expensive those are? I've got a pair of them. They're really cool. But, boy, is it fair if your last name is Sherpa? And you climb mountains? That seems like it's kind of unfair. All right. Scientists have also found that the dirt on rubber ducks is dangerous. Now, these cute little yellow bath time toys, as some parents have long suspected, have been a haven for nasty germs and bugs. So when you squeeze them, there's like murky liquid release from these ducks. And inside them is potentially pathogenic bacteria. Well, that doesn't bother me too much about rubber ducks because that doesn't affect me. Just don't go start picking on rubber crocodiles. All right, we have a great hour here. Bill Inglis is already in studio, and then Congressman Tom Emmer is going to be with us. He's going to be, I believe, speaking to Dr. Ken Kaiser's class after the radio show, and then I'm guessing he's going to be with Vice President Mike Pence, who's at the Minneapolis Convention Center today. So he's got a busy day. And I'm sure you do, too. And we care about your day as well. So let's take a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Bill Inglis about how well are you using your time. Another good topic. It is 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. All right, we are back at 7 minutes after the hour. All right, get a load of this line. You must control your attention to control your life. How easily distracted are you? So your experience is what you're agreeing to pay attention to. That's going to become your experience. So we're going to talk to Bill Inglis this morning from BibleandBusiness.com. He's with me right in studio as we speak. And Bill, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
And let's break this down a little bit. Let's figure out what we need to do throughout our day to make sure we're focusing on the right things.
You know, this comes from an article in Harvard Business Review that I read recently. It's called "To Control Your Life, Control What You Pay Attention To."
I love it.
And the authors,
crazy smart.
Yeah, it is. And the article references some work by a gal named Mara Thomas. Mm-hmm. And she has this whole business now about attention management as opposed to time management. And the core of the conversation is that you shouldn't be trying to control or manage your time. You should be controlling what you pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when I heard that and I read it and I thought to myself, think about all the things that are inputs. What are the inbound vectors into each of our lives for
vectors.
Information? Well, it's a technical term.
Okay.
So what are the inputs into our lives, right? What mm-hmm. are the things that we pay attention to? And I started to make a list, and in well under a minute I had, you know, we have email, we have Twitter, we have Facebook, we have Instagram, TV, radio, books, websites, our phones, our tablets, our spouse, if we have one of those, hopefully not more than one, kids, friends, you got sermons on Sundays, you got Sunday school lessons, business meetings, and the list just goes on and on here. You got colors, you got lights, you got sounds and signals in your cars, all these inputs coming into us that we're supposed to pay attention to, and it just creates a life of distraction. And
are these the vectors you speak of?
These are the inbound vectors. Haven't you ever heard that? Haven't you watched like Top Gun or one of those movies?
I probably have, but the fact you're just dropping the word vector on me is just, you know, yeah. All right.
It's the inbound angle,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, so you look at this and you say to yourself, whether it's in business or whether it's in your personal life, what are the things that I need to pay attention to and what are the distractions I have? So, for example, you know, you might be working in Word at your desk and you're developing a document, and up pops this alert in the lower left-hand corner of your screen, you know, of an email or maybe an instant message.
You
got to
check
up.
That, don't you?
Yeah, you
got to
check it all. Mm-hmm. And these are these constant distractions that we have. Bill, put down your phone.
I have to check it. I just had an alert.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have to. You have to. Do you have to pay attention to these things? And what the article is saying is, decide what your inputs are going to be. Control what you pay attention to. Don't be a slave to all the distractions.
We're multitaskers, though, or at least we think we are.
Yeah.
Or a lot of people brag about it. Is that such a good thing?
You know, there is a class of people who are called supertaskers.
Ooh, and is these that are, bigger these than are, multitaskers?
It is. These
Impressive.
Are people who actually thrive and get a high on doing more than one thing at a time. In fact, if they don't do more than one thing at a time, you might find them actually starting to get a little depressed or a little down or a little distraught because they don't have the adrenaline and the thrill of multitasking all the time.
I'm not sure what you're being distracted by, though, is very helpful. I mean, it seems like all those things you just read, now some of them are very helpful if you're distracted by, for example, your friends or your spouse or your kids. And that's not a bad thing.
No.
No, I mean, that's just the big picture. But there are certainly other things on your list, email, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know, it's even creepy that Facebook might be listening to you.
Oh, don't even get me started on Facebook right now.
But I'm just saying, all these things should be on your radar, but how you focus on them is, I think, where you make the difference between getting things done and being distracted all day long.
And I think the article is going to argue that maybe you shouldn't be paying attention to all of these distractors.
Oh.
Maybe you should be taking much more control of the elements that you pay attention to. Look, you go back 100 years. Go back to, this is 2018, right? So go back to 1918. What were the average inputs that a person had into their lives? I mean, think about it for a moment. They had newspapers. They had books. They had spouse, kids, maybe some sermons. I can't think of anything else they had from an information perspective of the inputs into their lives. They had easily less than 10, maybe only 5 or 6. Now we've got 30, 40, 50 things that we're supposed to pay attention to. And in some ways, if you don't pay attention to these things, you're considered out of the loop or out of touch, or you're just not with it in some way. And so there is something there to be said for paying attention to what's in front of you and then deciding what you put in front of you.
So let's talk about, what does this mean as far as success in life? What do you mean, oh my?
Oh, just no, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying. Okay, how do we decide what is going to be the vectors we pay attention to and the inbound vectors we ignore?
He's
going
to use that someday.
Oh, yeah,
he's
going to wear that out. I'm going to wear that out. Okay, Vector Boy, let's go. Give me an answer.
I'm sorry, what was your question again?
The question is, how do we start to navigate these? How do we decide what goes in and what needs to be put aside? Let's be real plain and simple. What do we do?
The first thing that we do is, believe it or not, I think this is kind of an emotional thing, and I think it's a God thing. I think, first of all, you go to the Lord and you say, what are the things that I should really be paying attention to?
That's right? Actually a lot of wisdom right there, Bill English.
I'm Vector Boy to you.
All right.
So, look, our pastor at our church has actually talked about this on several Sundays over the last year, and he's talked about our use of Facebook and how much we're using Facebook and how it reflects on us as Christians. I think there's something to be said for not doing a lot of Facebook, and there's something to be said for not doing a lot of Twitter or not doing a lot of Instagram if your goal is to fulfill Ephesians 4 or those types of passages where all of your speech should be seasoned with salt and should be godly and holy and encouraging and uplifting of other people. If you're going to pay attention to the inbound vectors that give you a lot of salacious stuff and a lot of messages that are ungodly, then maybe you should cut those out of your life. You do have control over what you pay attention to. And so it just seems to me that, first of all, we go to God. Secondly, and we ask him what and who we should be paying attention to. Secondly, I think we need to go through some emotional work. Have you ever tried, and this is just a rhetorical question, have you ever tried closing your email for 3 hours at work so that you can get work done? And the emotional anxiety that you go through in not being connected for those 3 hours.
Yeah, but there are people right now saying, well, that's how I work, is responding to emails. So if my emails are closed, I'm gonna hear from a lot of people in a very angry way.
I have never seen a job description that says one of your primary duties is to do email.
No, never. One of your primary duties is to work, and
it's
sometimes work comes at you through email.
Sometimes
right?
It does, but you can control the velocity at which the inbound messages come to you, and you can control when you read them.
I agree to that, but people are not very good at that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and I think it's impartially, it's a learned response, and that if we don't have it open, we experience an emotional anxiety about not having it open and
right.
not knowing what's going on at that very moment.
So how do you deal with that anxiety?
I think you just learn to get along without email or Twitter or those
mm-hmm.
kinds of things for brief periods of time.
Mm-hmm. What about your phone? I remember when my nephew, he left this this message on his phone, and it used to say, "Hi, this is Bill. I'm not answering my phone right now." And the first time I heard that, I thought, what? You're not answering your phone?
Well, no, he's not.
No, he's not. But it's not like, hey, sorry I missed your call. He would say, I'm not answering my phone. It's like his phone is like right there. He's just not answering it because he was working. Now today he's a successful surgeon.
You know what?
Connect those dots, Vector Boy.
For a number of years when I owned my training company, my outgoing message on my phone was, I don't do voicemails very well, so please don't leave a message. Send me an email at, and I gave
okay.
my email address.
That's smart.
Because I knew that inbound
right.
Ability to receive a voicemail, I just wasn't good at it.
Yeah.
And so I managed that
mm-hmm.
part.
Then your emails are always open, and you're always taking emails, right?
Well, at the time, that's
yeah,
true,
there you
yes.
go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, let me take a break. When I come back, more with Bill English. It's 17 minutes after the hour. We're back. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I have in studio Bill English, and his Inbound Vectors band is with us this morning. Bill, how do we give God the priority as to what we should be paying attention to? We say to God, give us the priority, lead us through your Holy Spirit, that we may know what to pay attention to.
You know, Rebecca had a great comment while we were off air there that the more elements that we're paying attention to, right,
mm-hmm.
The less that we're going to have capacity or time or desire probably even to pay attention to the voice of God. So one of the things that I think that we need to look at is controlling and somewhat minimizing the inbound messages into our lives so that we have capacity and time to develop listening to the voice of God. All of us have to learn how to listen. Listening is a skill that is very difficult to perfect, even in an interpersonal relationship like what you and I have or what we have with Rebecca and that kind of thing. It becomes even more important when we're trying to listen or trying to learn to hear the voice of God and to listen to the Holy Spirit in our daily lives.
So let's go to some scripture verses that
sure.
might encourage us
sure.
on this topic.
Well, I don't know how many of these are going to encourage us. I chose ones that I thought had some stark contrasts
okay.
in them. So one is Ezekiel 3:7, and it reads like this, "But the people of Israel are not willing to listen to you because they are not willing to listen to me. For all the Israelites are hardened and obstinate."
Hmm.
And there you find that a person who's not willing to hear the voice of God, who's not willing to listen to God, is equated with having a hard or an obstinate heart. That's not a good place for us to be as Christians.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Hard and obstinate heart. I wonder how many of us are going, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when was the last time we... Now, there are some out there listening today who don't have a theology of hearing the voice of God. They believe that God speaks only through the Scriptures. I would just respectfully disagree with that and say that we can hear the Holy Spirit and the voice of God that is dynamic in real time in our lives.
Don't we take that, though, and measure that against what Scripture says?
Yes, we can.
Shouldn't we must?
Yeah. Well, yeah, shouldn't we must? That's what I haven't heard it put that way.
Well, that's just the kind of the new lingo around here.
Well, you know,
my incoming vector.
My sheep know my voice. Mm-hmm. Isaiah 40, this is, you'll hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. I could go into the theology of the voice of God, but There's I think there's ample scriptural, not commands necessarily, but references and evidence to say that, yeah, we can hear the voice of God.
Proverbs 18:13 says, to answer before listening, that is folly and shame.
It is. When we don't listen to others, we are committing folly and shame. Now think about this. You're at church and you're talking with somebody and another person walks by and you know you need to talk to them. And so your eyes divert to that person and you suddenly lose focus on the person who's in front of you. Mm-hmm. To me, that's folly and shame because you're not listening. The God, if you really believe in the sovereignty of God and that God is ordering your steps in a positive way, then the person who is in front of you is the person God has for you at that moment. And you need to give them your full attention. Besides, it's just basic respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's just basic respect. If I were to sit here and try to do an interview with you, and every time you try to ask me a question, I'm off, you know, checking my phone or doing something, you're not going to feel very respected. You're not going to feel valued. And so learning to listen is something that we need to do. Learning to listen to the voice of God shows that we respect and we care for God as well.
Well, that's a hard thing. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you, but I'm also seeing Congressman Tom Emmer.
Yeah, you are. I've noticed your eyes divert about half a dozen times right now.
So you're nailing me as we speak on the very thing we're talking about.
It wasn't intentional, though.
Well,
seriously.
But what about just situational awareness? I mean, I know it's really nice to give someone your undivided attention, but if you're at church and you're passing through hallways and you see nine people you want to talk to, how do you do that well?
Well, you don't, because what the research has shown is that when you are highly distracted in a given moment, your situational awareness actually goes down, not up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little bit of a misnomer to say that I'm trying to be situationally aware by letting myself be distracted by all these various inbound vectors. Instead, mm-hmm. What I would say is that if the more you learn to focus on what's in front of you and you've chosen that to be what's in front of you, actually the higher your situational awareness.
Yeah. All right, Bill. Are these skills that can be developed?
Yes.
You hear people that say, oh, I'm terrible at remembering names. And I think, well, no, you're not. You just haven't really learned. There's a skill to learning.
Yeah, there is a skill names. To learning. And there are resources on the internet that can help you do that. And mm-hmm. yes, learning to listen is something is as much about your emotional control and saying what I want to say back to you is less important than me showing you the respect of listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, listening can be developed, and learning to hear the voice of God and distinguishing it from the voice of the enemy is something that can also be developed. And a lot of people don't go to the voice of God because they're afraid that the enemy is going to deceive them and they're going to end up in sin. My thing is if you are learning how to hear the voice of God, very quickly you will learn how to distinguish the voice of the enemy, and you won't want to go down that path.
Mm-hmm. Well, we oftentimes just carry on parallel monologues, don't we? I'm just waiting for you to stop talking so I can start talking. I'm not really listening to what you're saying. I'm kind of listening, but I'm more about telling you what I want to say next versus listening to what you're saying and responding.
So then
to
ask
that.
The Lord. Ask the Lord, what do you want me to hear out of this?
It's really a good encouragement.
Yeah.
Because as we go out into our workday, it's what we're going to be taking in and listening to, and who we're going to be listening to, which will be a way to share our faith and our love for others by just listening.
Some of the greatest people that you, I'll put this differently, some of the people that you have the greatest respect for are the people who listen to you the best. If you become a listener, you will be a leader and an influencer.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that why people go see therapists sometimes? Because this person's going to listen to me.
Yeah. You know, and I did therapy for 9 years as a psychologist, and I can tell you that.
Were you in the chair or on the couch? Which person were you?
Well, I was on both,
okay.
But mostly in the chair.
Okay.
And what I would say is that some people did pay just to have somebody to listen to them, which is quite sad.
It is sad. All right, Bill English, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good stuff.
It's important to prioritize what we pay attention to. That's going to make and shape who we are. Ask God to give you that priority. Make him your top priority. We'll take a break. We come back coming up in just about 20 minutes or 15. We're going to have Congressman Tom Emmer with us. Be back in a minute. It's 31 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a short break for news. And then when we return, Congressman Tom Emmer already in studio. Look forward to that conversation. Be back in a minute.
There's nothing more difficult for parents than dealing with a teenager out of control. So now's the time to look for support. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If tensions are running high at your house, chances are you're keeping those emotions bottled up in an effort to keep peace. But one of the best things you can do for your family is to get yourself healthy. So find a group of parents that are dealing with family issues as well. Find friends who aren't afraid to call you out on hard issues. You need a place to speak honestly and know that you're not alone. The support that you feel as a parent will directly influence the help that you can be to your teen.
Parenting Teens isn't for the faint of heart. Strengthen your parenting muscles with Mark Gregson's free two-week boot camp called Tough Guys and Drama Queens at freeparentingcourse.com.
That's nice intro music. All right. The word of the day is delegate. That's actually Merriam-Webster's word of the day, delegate, to entrust to another, to appoint as one's representative, to assign responsibility or authority, the definition of delegate. And with me in studio is Congressman Tom Emmer. He was sworn in for his first term in the U.S. House of Representatives on January 6, 2015. And then again on November 8, 2016, he was overwhelmingly reelected to a second term. And he's with us this morning. Hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Any Dyna Boy like myself? So we have a lot to talk about.
Well, I'm just laughing. I love it. It doesn't usually start that way.
No, it doesn't, does it? But what do you think of the Wild this year? Let's get serious right away.
I'm going to tell you, I think they're celebrating eking out a couple of points here this week, but you know, they've been through a lot. I could be the typical Minnesotan and be sour and, well, you know, they should be winning doing this. They're actually going to get into the playoffs.
They are.
And once you get into the playoffs, it is truly a different season. I am really impressed with Stahl.
I mean,
talk about a guy who's completely resurrected. And I would suggest, even though I don't know him personally, that the change in scenery moving from, what was it, Carolina to New York and now to Minnesota. He moved his family to Minnesota. And whenever I see pictures of him with his boys and they're skating and doing whatever, in order for you to be productive in your job, it's pretty important that your family is happy, healthy, and growing. And it looks like they found the right home.
It really does. And I'm excited. And you're absolutely right, Tom, because when playoffs hit, it's a brand new day. And whatever happened in the season doesn't matter anymore.
By the way, I should tell you, we played in the congressional hockey game 2 weeks ago. The good guys won. It's funny because one of my colleagues, John Katko from New York, his mother passed the night before the game, so he had to leave and go back to Syracuse, which opened up a spot that one of the guy who runs the program invited my second son, Jack, to play because we have members of Congress and then staff from Congress, and I've got a son who works for a different member out of Florida because that's where he went to school. Met this guy, and the guy got elected to Congress, and he said he wanted to go to work in Washington. So now I got a son who I never see that works there, but he played in the hockey game. First time the two of us have been on the ice together in 11 years.
Right? Wow.
We got to play defense together, and I'm proud to announce that the bad guys, that's the other team, they only got 12 shots on net.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I told the story not because of that segue with my son, but because everybody who's ever played that game wants to not only see the Stanley Cup, you know, and when they're little kids, they dream of having their name on it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get older and you know you're not going to have your name on it, you hope that one of your friends wins it so that they bring it over to your house and you can, you know, whatever they do, drink beer out of it.
Yeah,
or do.
Yeah.
Well, the NHL participates in the congressional hockey game because we raise money for inner city kids' college scholarships. We've raised about $10 million with this game over the over the last 10 years. I think they've sent 10 kids to college. So the NHL is heavily involved, and they bring the Stanley Cup, and we have a reception. And the other day, unlike in 2002, I think it was, or four, when they had it at the XL Center, and my whole family was around it. If you come into my congressional office, you'll see a picture of this event.
Love it.
My whole family's around it, and the guy with the white gloves was looking the other way. And my youngest son, Johnny, I tried to set him in the top of the cup, and I thought I was going to jail.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They all came running.
Oh, that's a no-no.
Anyway, the other day, it was in Washington, and I said, I'm taking a picture with the Stanley Cup, and I said, can I touch it?
Uh-huh.
And the guy says, absolutely, go ahead. So now I have a picture. It took me 56 years, but I finally actually got to touch the Stanley Cup.
Were you a defenseman?
I was not. They turned me into one at the end, and you might laugh. The guy who turned me into a defenseman is the outgoing coach of the Minnesota Gophers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I played for Don Lucia. So I went to St. Thomas Academy, grew up in Edina, went to St. Thomas Academy, ended up at Boston College after being one of 40 kids invited to try out for the U.S. Junior Olympic team in 1979, summer of 79. That got me an invitation to Boston College, spent a year there playing for Len Siglarski. The lumber business, it was the Emmer Brothers Lumber Company, went upside down, took a leave of absence that spring to be closer to the family as my dad and his brothers reorganized the business. And when it was time to go back to Boston after that winter, there's a guy who showed up from the University of Alaska who said, unless you think you're playing in the NHL, you might want to consider coming to the University of Alaska where you can hunt and fish and get a grade. I don't even think he finished the education piece. The truck was loaded, and I think I left. So, no, it's, and Don Lucia just so happens his first coaching job was at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great story, Tom. Now, you've got seven kids, six boys and a daughter.
Now, you left out the most important person in my life, Jackie.
Jackie,
and
of course.
I have
of course,
seven kids.
Of course.
Yes.
I should have framed that better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But seven kids and six boys, that's incredible.
Well, one thing we've learned, and Jackie and I would give advice to anyone who's out there since we're at the tail end of it now, and I know that parents who are older that have already raised multiple males. First off, I would say to them that my daughter is my favorite and all the boys know it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Second, if you have more than one son, if you have two, three, four sons and you're just starting out, my advice, and Jackie will echo this, sell everything that is nice now. Everything. They will break it eventually or
liquidate
they will take
your
it
home.
Apart. Yes.
Yes. Get rid
yes,
of
and
everything.
I've got some reconstruction advice for at least one bathroom, but we can talk about that off air.
Yeah. Now, did you guys have a punch card at ER?
Actually, you say that it was every holiday somebody was going in to get stitches.
Of course. There's got to be something. So it's like, here's another Emmer kid. Get the punch card out.
Actually, you know? That's another story. So I decide I'm going to run for Congress because my predecessor and friend, Michelle Bachmann, announces she's not going to seek reelection. So I get all these calls, going to run for Congress. We're having this discussion. I have a friend of mine come over one night to talk about what we're going to do with health insurance because I was doing the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to have a job if I started running for Congress. So how are we going to do this? He leaves the house about 10 o'clock that night. We were out on the front steps. He leaves. Jackie and I are going in. It's time to go to bed. And she hears something. I, of course, hear nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still headed upstairs. She says, no, there's something wrong. Goes down in the basement. We had a sewer backup in our basement, which I've always joked. The good Lord said, you want to go to Congress? Well, here, I'm going to teach you what it looks like before you get there. We spent, we shouldn't say that. I campaigned that summer. Jackie spent the summer being the general contractor redoing the basement, which had to be completely gutted. And I tell you the story because it relates to the boys this way. We hung three mirrors, about 4 feet tall, about a foot wide each one, spaced by about an inch. And we'd had them hung there for years till the basement got flooded. Now we got to strip the walls and everything else. We took those mirrors down and remembered the reason we hung them is because the boys were wrestling and one of them threw the other one's back end through the drywall in between two studs and I didn't want to fix it. So we just got the mirrors and hung it over.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. My Uncle John Emmer once told me that it's the greatest experience you'll ever have. He had seven kids. They lived in Edina on Antrim Road and used to go over to his house. The doors wouldn't be on the hinges and the, you know.
Yeah. Was there ever a lock on your door growing up?
I don't want to say it out loud. No.
Of course not.
No.
No, I mean, we had a key to lock the door. We didn't know where it was. But, but with people coming in and out all day long and there'd be eight kids in the family. and all of their friends. It was a train station.
Well, in the Arnold House, I imagine, was a bit of a train station.
It was a little bit of one.
Yeah.
All right. This is, again, another hard-hitting interview, because that's what I do. So let me take a break. When we come back, I'll ask Tom some serious questions in just a minute. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Welcome back to the show. 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I have Congressman Tom Emmer in studio with me, which I'm very excited about. A couple of the Dyna Boys chatting it out. And, you know, I was in a gang in Edina.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was a nonviolent gang.
Was it the Cahill gang?
No. We were nonviolent. If we ever wanted to rumble, we'd go over to Richfield and correct misspelled graffiti. That's what we did.
That's so bad.
We were a tough group.
You know, as a kid going to those Edina, before it was East and West, mm-hmm. as a kid, you know, in my before the age of 12, going to those old Edina Richfield games.
So fun.
Oh, those kids. I mean, today we got to put helmets and elbow pads and everything just to ride a bike, right?
I know. Yes.
Back then, they're like swinging at each other in the stands. Of course, today, you know, they wouldn't just use their hands, which is the problem.
Yeah. All right. Recently, Rex Tillerson said that D.C. was a mean-spirited place. He probably never met you. What have you learned about working in our nation's capital that discourages you the most?
Self-interest.
Okay.
Yeah, it's self-interest.
But people always say, I'm here to work for the people. I'm here to work for the American people.
Yeah,
is that just talk?
That's funny. Okay. I think with some of them, I think some of them it's very real.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of people. It's probably one of my greatest good surprises of Washington, D.C. You know, probably like a lot of people who listen to your show, probably like a lot of people I know, I got all my information from where I wanted to get it, where I'm comfortable
sure.
getting it. And
sure.
I would, on a regular basis, before I ever got to Washington, I would think, who are these people? And they obviously don't know what a couple that's raising seven kids trying to keep food in the refrigerator and pay the mortgage and put clothes on the kids. They have no concept of what they're doing to us.
Mm.
And I figured they were all people who thought moron was two words. So I got to Washington and looked around. And it was like, you know, there's some really good people here, and they are very interested. Unfortunately, there are those, as there are in every walk of life, right? There are people that are very self-interested, and it's about their future
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the next generation.
You know, I was listening to the radio the other day, and it was a fundraiser, and President Trump got up and started thanking people, and he must have thanked you about six times. Now, what was that event? Would you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I had the honor of chairing the National Republican Congressional Committee is the campaign arm of the National Republican House, the U.S. House of Representatives. They have the Republican National Committee. The Senate has their Senate Committee. This is the outside of the official duties of the office. This is how we run campaigns.
Okay.
And the March dinner, the annual March dinner, is the single largest fundraiser for the GOP representatives in the U.S. House. And I was asked in my second term to chair it by mm-hmm. our great chairman, Steve Stivers, out of Ohio. And we raised a record amount of money. So anybody who's listening out there, you hear the talking heads on the mainstream media telling you, you know, we've lost our momentum. There's all these problems. I'm going to tell you, the momentum's there. We raised $32 million.
Right.
And the president was he was rather entertaining. He got up and he said, you know, I was here last year, and you set a record. He said, 2 years before, not so good. He said, now I'm here this year again. You set another record. And then he, you know, started calling people out, and he said, where's Tom Emmer? And I waved at him. I was up in the front, and I said, it was all you, Mr. President,
mm-hmm.
which he said, he smiled. He said, oh, isn't that nice? I'll give you half the credit.
All right. Well, when you talk about, I hear this expression, we have to reach across the aisle. Is that just another made-up expression?
No.
Does that work?
I was once told that I don't reach across the aisle well, and I said to the person who said it to me, you clearly don't know enough about me because I reach across the aisle all the time. The only difference between me and others is when I reach across the aisle, it's to grab your hand and pull you over with us. All right? Mm-hmm. And it really is about relationships. No, I think that's a real thing. Reaching across the aisle, though, means different things to different people. And I will put it in this context. I think politicians have ruined the word compromise because, well, I'll give you this example. I used to use this on the campaign trail. When Jackie and I got married, Jackie wanted 4 kids and I wanted 3. We compromised. We have 7. All right. Now, it works wonderful in marriage. But in government, the problem is when they compromise like that, everybody gets everything they want, but we get a whole bunch of stuff we don't need and we can't afford. And so people get more and more upset. Reaching across the aisle really is about building relationships with people that want the same things we do. We want good schools. We want good, a strong military. We want good infrastructure, roads, bridges, etc. We want the same things. We just have a different way of getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Reaching across the aisle should be about building relationships with people on the other side of the aisle that have a different approach to get the same thing and not violating our principles, but finding a way to get there together without violating our principles and our beliefs.
Now, you're in Minneapolis today. You're going to be hanging out a little bit with Vice President Mike Pence.
We are.
What's that going to be about?
So it's about trade. I take it back. I've got the trade after the Pence event. The Pence event's going to be all about the tax cuts that were just passed.
Okay.
It's interesting. They call it tax reform. They call it tax cuts. And I was having a discussion on the ride down about the problem. People want their political folks to start talking to them in reality, right? You got the head of the DFL party. When Mike Pence comes into town and says he's going to be talking about the tax cuts and how they're impacting the U.S. in a good way, you got the head of the DFL party issuing a thing, oh, they're tax cuts for the rich and that. That's just wrong. And when Republicans try to pick their own facts and change it, it's wrong. I mean, this tax bill that we passed at the end of December, this thing is, I think it's going to be the single greatest economic growth provider that we could have ever given to this country.
Mm-hmm.
Dropping the corporate tax, and they all say, look, you helped corporations. Wait a second. Think to yourself. No corporation pays tax. It's a business. It passes the tax down through the bottom line, and you and I end up paying that tax. So when we dropped that tax down to 21% and made it competitive with the rest of the free world, you know what we did? We reversed the flow of companies leaving our country to find other countries with a better tax rate. And yes, they do it because they have a fiduciary obligation to their shareholders to do what's best for the company. We reverse that. So now it comes back. And you know what? Eventually what you will see, it, in fact, you've already seen it, is growth starts to go bonkers. We're over 3% already. And I'll just put it in context. Remember that in 8 years under President Obama, it was barely 2%, and they told us that was the new normal. And by the way, some of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s, we remember being told, get used to the new normal. And we ran into a guy who said, you know what? If you think you can't achieve, you won't. If you think you can achieve great things, you know, shoot for the moon. You might get a few stars. And I think that's what we're doing.
Tom, I appreciate your service in Washington on behalf of the people in Minnesota. Do you get to spend much time in the summer here in our great state of Minnesota?
I'm a commuter. So the answer is yes.
Awesome.
I am home every weekend.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, and blessings on your day and your work and your family. Just a delight to have you in studio.
Same to the Arnold family.
Thanks for having me. All right, we'll take a short break and wrap up the show in just a minute. All right. Thank you so much to Congressman Tom Emmer. What a big day he's got planned. Going to go be with Vice President Mike Pence at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Awfully nice to have him in studio. Always a thrill to be in the company of people who are in service for the people of this great country. So we are thanking him and thanking Bill English for coming into the studio as well, and Ken Kaiser and Mitch Glazer. What a great day we've had. If you want to take this broadcast and pass it on to a friend, go to myfaithradio.com, go to the Early Morning Late Show, and you can send on anything you heard today to a friend or review it. If you missed part of the show, it's been a great show and a great day. I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.